Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Sara Gahn. Sara, how are you doing?
Lovely. It's the warmest third of May I've ever seen, as you can see. Seamless.
Yes, it's a lovely autumn day in Johannesburg, the best season in Johannesburg, bar none. And we're also joined today by Mr. Michael Morris. Michael, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Pretty nice weather here too, a bit cooler, I think, than seems to be in Johannesburg, but comfortable. It's always a
Indeed.
pleasure.
And so on this lovely autumn day, let's get into the news, which is not as lovely as the weather. The first story we're going to talk about today is some warnings from the ratings agency Moody's. Moody's Investors Service has warned that a coalition government could imperil South Africa's recovery. Now, there's something kind of hidden in this idea that South Africa is recovering of, you can say, what are we recovering from? Are we recovering from the Zuma years? Are we recovering from COVID? Are we recovering from something else? But that aside, they say that South Africa is faced by major challenges of years of sluggish economic growth, power shortages, and high unemployment, and that the current government has made, quote, incremental progress on these issues. They go on to say that a coalition government, and they don't really talk about the makeup of said coalition in the reporting here, but they say the strength or otherwise of the new administration's mandate and any concessions to minor parties needed to secure support could make the already complicated management of fiscal, economic, and social policy objectives even more difficult. As we know, South Africa has struggled, especially since the beginning of the Zuma era, with any kind of economic growth starting in around sort of 2008, 2009. And in the past decade, we've averaged about 0.8% economic growth, which is very bad because it means that per person, South Africa has gotten poorer. And we can also see the results now in things like our ridiculously high unemployment rate, the low level of savings, the high levels of debt, the kind of general despair and hopelessness that seems to have fallen over so much of the country, from many people in the upper echelons all the way down to the poorest person. Things are not going so well for the average South African. So, Sara, we were talking a little bit about this particular story in the pre-show discussion, and what strikes me is the overvaluing of the status quo in some ways here. I definitely agree that a coalition government with, say, for example, the EFF could produce some very negative results for South Africa. I think it definitely could make things worse. But this idea that South Africa has been making incremental progress on fixing some of these issues is, I think, completely wrong when you look at the policy proposals that the ANC has been pushing forward. For example, the expropriation bill, which allows nil compensation expropriation without compensation, the NHI bill, and a whole raft of other things. Yes, there have been little, concessions to the private sector. Oh, we're going to let Transnet partner with some foreign private company to improve this, or here we're going to slightly lift the rules about who can generate electricity. Those are good, but they are way overwhelmed by the bad policies that just keep coming out of government. What do you make of this story?
Well, I think the analyst was on sick leave or something because he really didn't he she d really didn't delve into the fact that there are coalitions and coalitions. We know that either way it's going to be rough, but yes, EFF as a coalition is the seventh circle of hell. But a coalition of opposition parties would give a would at least give a level of hope that we haven't seen in this country for a very, very long time. So the challenges will be great, but they should, I really would have expected Moody's to spell that out a little. That they are two very different types of coalitions, and they could have very different results. It's not. I don't know how. I can't remember how often Moody's comes out with its analysis, but it's like, okay, well, since the end of last year, you've got all that legislation that is truly horrendous, would be of no value to any potential investor. If anything, the opposite. I mean, they've just put out BEE, our Minister of Labour has just put out BEE regulations, which make things much more clearly quotas rather than targets, even though they still use the term. I mean, it's almost Alice in Wonderlandish. And so to say that, there's an incremental change to for the negative is what I would say. So if the EFF doesn't join up with the ANC, it's bad business as usual and probably worse. But if things change and one doesn't know the dynamic, if you get a change in, say, Gauteng provincial government that differs to a national government, it could be significant because within it you've got Johannesburg and Pretoria and you've got significantly the most number of voters in Gauteng. So it's so shallow, they may as well just see, you know, refer December 31st analysis and come back in a wild time and said something useful, because that was like business as usual. And it was
the analyst quote in this story, his name is Aurelian Marley, which is such Aurelian is such a cool name. It's
great name.
late Roman emperor. But anyway, that aside, he does sort of hint that the MK and EFF are the parties talking about. He says the election raises the possibility that policies from comparatively radical parties, including policies from not friendly to investors, will emerge. We already have
so
that.
Can I just say in response to that is that if you a potential investor, but you don't know much about South African politics, which I imagine is largely the case. A little bit more digging down to explain, you know, who and what, and that some may have a more regional than a national effect. You know, it's not helpful.
I agree completely. And, you know, this once again, you know, a comment like that, policies not friendly to investors will emerge. I mean, the entirety of the last parliament has been filled with more changes that have made South Africa's policy environment less friendly to investors. And you can see that reflected in the fact we have such terrible economic growth at the moment. Michael, what do you make of this story? What do you make of the analysis here?
I mean, you know, his comment about incremental progress on all these issues, I could just find the piece. The quote immediately preceding that, you know, mentioned sluggish economic growth, curbing chronic power shortages, and reducing very high unemployment. Well, I don't know if there's been any incremental progress on any of those. I mean, we know that there's no load shedding at the moment, but there's a good reason to be somewhat skeptical, if not entirely cynical, about why that is. I mean, you know, just looking at it again, it reminds me why, I suppose, I am. But social scientists, typically, maybe politicians, that tend to be a little bit skeptical or cynical, for that matter, about business-minded people whose focus is always on a sort of the next cycle and reducing, you know, whatever the impediments or obstacles to profit-making might be in the next cycle or the next year or the next quarter, whatever it might be. Whereas if you're looking at those sort of kind of national historical moments, you're tending to look at a much longer time frame. And here, for instance, you know, if I think back to 1990, it might typically have been said in 1990 that, you know, if we look ahead, if too much is done too quickly, there's going to be terrible volatility and terrible risk, and perhaps we shouldn't contemplate going down that route. Let's just stick with what we know. There's been incremental progress. You know, the National Party has been allowing odd little bits of reform and so on. So, well, let's just do the sort of Fabian gradualist route here. Take the gradualist route, and I think that is probably a natural sin, perhaps, of people who are in business. They must reduce risks and be very mindful of their inability to control those risks, I think, often. So it is understandable, but it definitely is a flaw. And the incumbency, I suppose, always looks a little bit better if you take away all the political passion. You remove that from it, and you can say, well, you know, Ramaphosa, it's kind of kept things steady, and things are not quite as bad as people make out. The strong private sector and so on, but that is very deceptive. And as you both pointed out, that, you know, we have very serious policy risks, and the plain data on some of these basics, economic growth and unemployment, are really just the huge, huge red lights, and which should tell sensible, reasonable people that even if it is going to be a bit risky, we do actually need to think very seriously about a reorientation of our kind of ideological outlook. And that ultimately means thinking about a different kind of government.
Right. There's also a kind of idea in this analysis that you know, there's going to have to be some sort of concession to like patronage, political patronage, in order to pull a coalition like this together, right? We could, so he says, what was it specifically? And any concessions to minor parties needed to secure support could make already complicated management of fiscal, economic, and social policy objectives even more difficult. But, you know, I'd argue that that actually is not necessarily the case, because all that will happen is the already well-established patronage network that dominates our state would just be, you know, sort of divided up outside the ANC. So instead of all of it going to ANC cadres and the careful balancing act that is internal ANC politics, some of it would go to the EFF or MK or whatever other party, maybe, I don't know, the IFP or the PA or whatever party is going to form a coalition with the ANC. Sara, do you have any final thoughts on this before we move on?
No, just to say, I think essentially what the message going out is, things are bad. They're not probably not going to get better. Don't invest yet.
Yeah, I think that is probably the bottom line. I just wish that there was a little bit more analysis from the sort of mainstream of the financial firms and things about the bad policies that the government has implemented now. It's not just all a story of reform and happiness and onward, up sunlight moving because Ramaphosa is a great reformer, because he isn't. There's no evidence to support that. Okay, speaking of things not being great, let us talk about a little bit of an interesting infrastructure story in the city of Johannesburg. So I think it was on Wednesday. There was a Wednesday night. There was a major fire that broke out, presumably from some cables, electrical cables melting. I'm not entirely sure what the cause is, and I don't think it's been established yet. But some electrical cables underneath the central business district of Johannesburg caught fire, and sort of fire emerged from under the ground and blocked off a portion of the M2 highway. That may have also significantly damaged a highway bridge. We're still not sure yet about that. It's being analyzed at the moment. But this fire sprung from a network of underground tunnels, these sort of utility service tunnels that exist underneath the center of Johannesburg. And these tunnels have been causing quite a lot of problems in recent years. There was a car plant story, I think it was earlier this year or maybe last year, where they examined the use of these tunnels as sort of thoroughfares for illegal miners. Also for various types of criminals. You know, you can commit a crime. If you know where these tunnels are, you commit a crime, say, in Heelbrow, and you quickly jump down into the tunnels and flee, and you can pop out a couple of kilometers away with no one being able to properly track you. And I think this kind of just highlights that there is a general sense of sort of infrastructure decay and disorder that is not really being dealt with. I think it's very clear that these tunnels are actually beginning to become a major crisis. The story that we're pulling from today about this is the latest development, which is that City of Johannesburg employees were underground assessing the damage caused by the fire when they basically entered into a gun battle with a number of cable thieves who were taking the opportunity that power was cut by the fire to a large section of the central business district to begin looting pieces of infrastructure. The City of Joburg employees came across some of their spoils as they were busy harvesting them, and confiscated them, which basically created this gun battle as the thieves attempted to drive them off and get it back. Now, it looks like the city officials managed to succeed here, but it is kind of a massive crisis, yet another one to hit Johannesburg relating to its infrastructure. It's not clear that these tunnels are going to go away or become less of a problem anytime soon. And who knows, maybe we'll have another exploding road or infrastructure fire or something like we've had in the recent weeks with Johannesburg. Sara, what do you make of the story?
Well, I think the problem with this is it goes not just to Joburg's infrastructural problems, but the fact that the party who is responsible for dealing with these problems is the party in power nationally. So it underlines the negative sentiments conveyed in Moody's that, you know, these problems are about not just about infrastructure or the lack thereof, but what you've got is disintegrating and it's becoming the Wild West, so to speak, at the same time, the Zamazamas and cable thieves, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, the problem with this is that it is the city's responsibility. So whatever happens with the national and provincial governments, they do not have direct responsibility for many of these things at all. So we could have an interesting, decent, possibly, useful government coming in at provincial, national level, or either or, but you've still got the city government run by the EFF and the ANC until, 2026? So whatever change there is, incremental or otherwise, and positive or not, whatever problems we have are going to take a hell of a long time to change, even if somewhere along the line, there's a floor crossing and the change in the on the city council level happens, change of parties. I think it also goes to to part of that narrative that Cyril Ramaphosa likes to create, which is pure nonsense, that, what government's done since 94, they leapfrog over from 94 to 2004 and forget most of the stuff in the middle. And certainly the stuff that came after Thabo Mbeki, imperfect as he was, for the last 20 odd years. And that is the fact that they didn't do any of this stuff. Any of these infrastructure projects that they purport to sort of improving the lives of people, they just didn't maintain them, and they haven't improved them, and they haven't built new things. So all that's happening is what they inherited is disintegrating. And because there's been so little attention paid to it, the disintegration is increasing, both in physical terms and in terms of essentially the infrastructure being hijacked. So Moody's put that in your pipe and smoke it, so to speak.
Yeah, I think if you wanted to kind of prove their case that coalitions with radical parties could produce negative results, I think the current state of Johannesburg is perhaps one of the better examples of that. I do think, and as you know, we must remember, the mayor of Johannesburg is, of course, from the Al Jamaha party as a sort of figurehead of this ANC-EFF coalition. And on one hand, not all of this is his fault. Some of these infrastructure problems have been coming a long time as a result of years of the terrible policies, cater deployment, preferential procurement, lack of political standards, of standards, that kind of thing, that's resulted to this infrastructure problem. Although I must say, the mayor continues to be one of the most inept, absent, unhelpful, useless politicians in this country, in my opinion. Michael, what do you make of the story?
I think it's a very vivid, metaphor is presented, by the idea of these underground tunnels being used by criminals in this way. It's a kind of, it's the quintessential underworld, if you like, the sort of dystopian motif that's made real here. And I think what it partly shows is the frightening resourcefulness of this alternative economy, criminal economy, in the absence of institutions that are credible and have authority and have been doing their work. They clearly haven't. In the absence of such institutions, the most resourceful in our society, unfortunately, have taken up the space, and they're exploiting, underground infrastructure, perfect stuff to use. You want to move goods or people around, you want to steal things without being seen below the surface, literally and metaphorically. It's a kind of frightening illustration. To extend the metaphor a little bit, it also shows the depth to which the rot has kind of penetrated. And I think it's unseen, but it's there. And here you have municipal officials going off to do a routine inspection or job of work, and they come face to face with a criminal reality, which is quite sobering. And I agree. I think Sarah mentioned, it might have been you, Nicholas, that what it also illustrates, of course, is the scale of the challenge that we will face once we get to a point where we have a new administration, or we have an opportunity to begin to do things about these kinds of problems. And it'll not be easy, it'll not be quick. There will be resistance for the reasons Sarah has also mentioned. There's a huge amount of political investment, I think, in things being as they are at the moment. There clearly is, the stuff is not unconnected with the patronage network, and millions of rands that are being siphoned off in various ways. So it is going to be difficult. People need to, need to be aware of that, that even a new government is not going to miraculously turn the country around in a year. And it's probably going to require, tightening of seatbelts, and we need to, going to need to be summoned as much resolve as we can manage, because the challenge is very considerable. I mean, who would have imagined just 20 years ago, underground tunnels, utility tunnels, or city maintenance tunnels under the biggest city in the continent being taken over by criminals. It's quite astonishing. Yeah.
Apparently some of them also were built in the 30s for carrying post around the center of the city. So some of these are quite old.
Carrying what around the center of the city? I missed that.
Post.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's yeah. I mean, it's
strange, you know, like, thing.
Kind of tube, tube for letters, yeah.
Sarah, any
thoughts? No. I think we've got to be careful of being full of doom and gloom, because they've managed to apparently establish enough power to the Metro Council, which itself was the victim of a fire last year, so that our mayor, whose name I can never remember, can give his State of the City address today. So,
yes,
whatever that was, or will be. I've got to take a nap.
Oh yeah, we're going to hear all the wonderful things he's going to tell us. I'm so excited. ever since that water outage, my patience with the mayor has been somewhat short. Anyway, let's move on to our next story. And this is about South Africa's state-owned enterprises. And of course, once again, we're talking about exactly the same issues here. We're talking about cater deployment. We're talking about preferential procurement. We're talking about over-centralization. All these things which have created so many problems in South Africa, and we can see them right here in the major state-owned enterprises. So the DA asked a question in Parliament asking for details on how much money had been spent on a couple of state-owned enterprises over the last 5 years, and what the financial return had been from this. Now, according to the reply that government gave, there has been 234 billion rand given to Eskom, for zero return, 33 billion rand to South African Airways for zero return, about just under 6 billion rand to Transnet for zero return, 9 billion rand to Danel for zero return. Alex Corr got no money but returned no money. And the South African Forestry Company, possibly one of the only, if not the only, state-owned enterprises that is functioning sort of mostly okay, didn't receive any bailouts and returned a dividend of 1 million rand. So for those keeping track at home, that means the government has bailed out SOEs to the tune of 282.5 billion rand. And in terms of dividends from those companies, it has made 1 million rand. Michael, what do you make of this?
I mean, I was looking at one of our viewers, Carl Edwards's comment: we need accountability and repercussions, then things might improve. And that's essentially the bottom line. It's one has a sense that perhaps in the South African Forestry Company, all kudos to them, there is some vestigial notion that they really do need to do their jobs. They need to count for themselves. They don't need to call on the public purse every 5 minutes for extra money. I don't know what the scale of this company is or what its contribution is to the economy, but that is exactly the kind of model that one wants. And it's not rocket science, I don't think. It literally is accountability and repercussions, as Carl Edwards has said. It's institutional integrity, is having the right people there. It's not difficult, actually. You've just got to do your job, have a clear idea of what it is, account to your seniors, account to the political principles, and so on. And that's really how it's got to be turned around. It is going to be difficult. But, I mean, those figures are a very graphic illustration of exactly why, the Moody's prognosis, or the very delicate way that it expressed itself, is perhaps misleading. That we have here a very, very vivid reflection of a financial difficulty. And I think, aren't there something like 700 SOEs or even more than 700? I mean, there are a lot. There are a lot.
That many, but there are quite a few, but I can't remember the exact number. I think it's,
I seem to think it think was it's... something ridiculously high anyway, but yeah.
So what's interesting to this to me about this, Sara, and you know, a thing we really don't discuss enough in South African politics is unintended consequences. So the ANC and their sort of bedfellows and the KASATU and the South African Communist Party and their siblings in the EFF and MK, they consider themselves, they say, we are the political parties that are for the poor, we are for the black South African, we are for the working class, we are for equality and all these things. But then you look at the consequences of the policies they've put out. For example, their insistence on holding on to a bunch of state-owned enterprises, not splitting up Eskom into multiple parts, continuing to fund out South African Airways, bail out South African Airways, even though, you know, we have lots of alternative options that work fine, whereas SAA just continues to lose money. A defense company that's inefficiently run, a transport company that doesn't do its job and needs to be bailed out all the time. And what essentially is happening is government is taking tax money, not just from the rich, but also the poor who pay money back, and giving it to a number of executives to run poor companies into the ground. It is the exact opposite of what their policies, their vision for South Africa is supposed to be. They are quite literally spending the money of the poor, the middle class, to fund executives. It is very bizarre. What do you make of this, Sarah?
Well, I think there are two things. One is that all of us, the minute you saw people like Dudumeyeni being put in charge of SAA, or any of people of that caliber going in, we all knew what would happen. And sure as nuts, that is exactly what happened. And I think it suggests that, you know, if Cyril Ramaphosa says our vision is, he's lying. There is no vision. There are words that are meant to be good for sound bites and, you know, a sort of oleaginous presence that's meant to calm the electorate. I think none of whom have, most of us are not calmed by anything they say, is that there isn't actually a vision. They are just sound bites about things that sound good, but they've long passed the point where visions are possible. That everything they've done that should meet a vision has largely been destroyed in it, almost every element of public life. And you know, I think it's you know, when I hear the comment of what I call my schnook friends about, you know, that actually no one's paying attention to what anybody's saying running up to these elections. I think that's true. I think it's largely true. There's very little even the ANC can do now. They'll do something, but even now that would make people think that they have a vision. I mean, you know, the first 10 years are good and have potential, and the next 20 years just send us backwards. There are no visionaries there.
Michael, any final thoughts on the story?
I just to use the brief opportunity of not having to speak to just have a quick look at how many SOEs there actually are. They're in fact approximately 700, believe it or not. The Department of Public Enterprises has full or part responsibility for six of them, being Alex Cordonell, Eskom, Transnet, South African Express, South African Forestry Company, and the SABC. But there are, there are approximately 700 of them. So it's a very, very considerable part of our kind of national activity. And, you know, just in this reference, I think you, Sara's point about, you know, vision and stated vision and words that people don't listen to anymore. Here's a description. The Minister of Department of Public Enterprises has publicly stated that South Africa's SOEs should advance economic transformation, industrialization, and import substitution. So, you know, we look at the state of our economy, the state of unemployment, we realize all this vast outlay of cash is actually not making the contribution that that it could do. There we go.
In fact, that there is. The results seem to be the opposite. We actually had a sort of internal presentation on South Africa's trade situation. And despite this obsession with import substitution and that kind of thing, we're actually going backwards in terms of industrial capacity and things like that. So the stated aims are what we're getting out of government at the moment is literally the opposite of their stated aims in so many cases. We're getting a more unequal society, we're getting a poorer society, and we're getting a society that is less local. I think one last thing from me is that I have been a little bit frustrated, but I mean it's not unusual just to South Africa, about how little policy has been discussed in this election so far. There's been a lot of analysis on, you know, who's getting this vote or that vote or who's doing well in this by-election, kind of horse race type thing, but there's been very little discussion about what the actual parties are proposing. There's been a little bit. But not that much. Anyway, we are out of time for today, so I hope that you all found the show interesting. We will be back, of course, tomorrow on Monday with the Daily Friend Show. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.